My name is Quinn Mitchell, and this is Into the Tussle. Today, I will discuss my takeaways from this presidential cycle, from my removals to my questions and much more. Stay tuned. Hello, everybody. Today is March 7th. It is a Thursday. It's the day of Joe Biden's State of the Union. But even more so, it's a day after when Nikki Haley dropped out, concluding the 2024 Republican presidential primary. I think this would be the perfect time to do it, to recount my experiences. And to just start off, I think I'll just give this little anecdote. So when I started off this cycle, my mom told me, hey, Quinn, you know, they might not like you as much as they used to because you're not as cute anymore. You know, because in 2020, when I met all the candidates, I was just like this little 11-year-old kid running around, talking to candidates, asking some, you know, pretty basic questions. There were a few exceptions when I asked a question to Joe Biden, which Laura Ingraham called me a plant and a stooge lacking the intellectual capability to ask such a question, which amuses me to this day. But then, you know, that's a story for another time. But went into this cycle with the expectation is might not as be easy as last time. I might not have as much as, you know, positive experiences as I had in the 2020 cycle. I just never expected it to go to the extent of being removed, you know, being harassed and, you know, getting kicked out of events. I never thought it would come to that. For just asking questions that Granite Staters have asked for generations. And I think my first takeaway from this cycle was just how much control there was. I mean, control infiltrated every aspect of the candidate this cycle. It was really outside control. Like I said earlier, you know, I've asked questions that Grant Staters have done for generations, but for some reason this cycle, it's gotten me into some unpleasant experiences. And the reasons for that is, you know, candidates have enjoyed control at other places before they came to New Hampshire, and the reason that candidates didn't get such hard questions this time isn't because of New Hampshire voters' inability to ask those questions, but it's because we were denied access to this control from super PACs to staffers, from staffers controlling Nikki Haley to the super PACs controlling DeSantis. There was a lot of control this cycle. And there was also just a lack of access due to that. You know, when I talk to New Hampshire political veterans, they often talk about, you know, how different it is now, how different it is to gain access. And even so, like the local press, they don't get access anymore. I mean, if you ignore local press 20, 30 years ago, it would have gone horribly for you in this state. Now it doesn't. So there definitely was a lot of control this cycle. I think my next takeaway is just how scary some of this was. I think it was scary because I think a lot of it was approaching to certain books of authoritarianism I've been reading when I was younger, and I felt I was on the precipice of like kind of a break of democracy in some aspects, just because how much control there was. And New Hampshire is really the best example of an open access democracy in our country, where citizens have the opportunity to go out, to vet the candidates, to meet the candidates, and for the candidates to really, really have to meet the people where they are and to care about the people. Not the other way around, where candidates serve themselves. You have to serve the people in New Hampshire, right? Those are traditions. Those are New Hampshire traditions. But this cycle, New Hampshire traditions matter to an extent. They still matter, but they just matter to an extent. You know, I could take a couple of examples here. Ron DeSantis came in the state. His first impression he left on Granite Staters was one of a guy who didn't care for traditions. He didn't really talk to press. He talked to them a little bit, but he never met with people after his events. He never really took questions. He never really did any of the traditional stuff we do here in New Hampshire, and he didn't really understand New Hampshire. That just comes, again, from these staffers who are giving people bad advice based on what they have learned in states where there isn't as much as and open access as New Hampshire has. Ron DeSantis left that first bad impression that kind of screwed him over here in New Hampshire. Nikki Haley left a last bad impression, which prevented her from scoring single digits because she came in the state and she came in the state after Iowa, and she really needed to throw everything she had on New Hampshire, because if she couldn't win New Hampshire, then she couldn't win the nomination. I mean, New Hampshire, it's an open access, you know, both independents and Republicans can vote in the Republican primary. And that was in because her electorate is based mostly centrist. This was a state she should have won. So she should have thrown everything she had on New Hampshire. Because if she could win New Hampshire, then that could influence the rest of the cycle. But no, she came in here, she didn't take questions. She wouldn't meet with people after events, so I have to give her credit for that. But she wouldn't take questions. She wouldn't, I can't remember if she did press interviews or not. I can't remember, but she didn't take questions and she didn't do the debates, which was a huge deal. I mean, you had DeSantis running around learning his lessons, saying, hey, you know, I'm the only guy who takes questions. Hey, I'm the only guy who's willing to debate. And that rhetoric made an influence, but again, he'd already blown that first impression. You rarely get second impressions in politics. So for Nikki Haley, it was that last impression that she made that she really should have thrown everything she had on New Hampshire. But for Ron DeSantis, it was that first impression. And both of these candidates, they were trying to follow the Trump playbook, because Trump is really the dominant force that changed New Hampshire traditions. And frankly, changed a lot of things in this country. He came to New Hampshire and 2016, he did his fly-in, fly-out rallies, wouldn't greet people, wouldn't take questions. He won. But these candidates, they're not Trump, because Trump is his own game. And they never, I think, quite understood that. I mean, even candidates such as Chris Christie, Vivek Ramaswamy, who followed New Hampshire traditions, who did everything down to the traditional playbook for New Hampshire, and they did elsewhere too, didn't work out for them. They lost. But you can't play a Trump game to Trump. And another takeaway for me was just candidates never truly took on the front runner, Donald Trump. I think there's a lack of seriousness there. I think at the forefront of a few candidates' minds, who were Tim Scott and Vivek Ramaswamy, the forefront of their mind for entering that race was to gain that vice presidential nomination. See where they are now. Ramaswamy on Trump's side, Tim Scott on Trump's side, whenever, you know, there's a victory speech. It's true what was on the forefront. It's clear, it's evident what was on the forefront of their mind. For other candidates, I think that thought of a vice presidential nomination just nagged in the back of their heads. And it really prevented them from really speaking out and making a clear difference that I, like, fundamentally believe that they knew deep down they had. But they never showed it. For one, I think they were seeking vice presidential nominations. I think a second one is because they were afraid of Donald Trump. They're afraid of that force. They're afraid of the force who basically controls the modern-day Republican Party. And candidates such as Chris Christie, who openly spoke out against that, look where he ended up. He ended up not winning the nomination. His very much anti-Trump rhetoric fell flat on MAGA. Because Donald Trump rewrote the playbook, and that's a playbook nobody else can follow. But they never understood that. So I think Chris Christie, in reflection, in one of his interviews after he ended his race, he said that the day this race was over is when 6 of the 8 candidates stood up on the stage and raised their hands when they say that they would vote for a convicted felon. But I really think if there was more Republicans who made more of a stand to the force that is Donald Trump, I think things would have been a lot different in some aspects. But again, that vice presidential nomination, that fear of Donald Trump really nagged in a lot of people's minds. I mean, I even remember one presidential candidate telling me once, just the charm of two people. For example, Ron DeSantis wasn't Donald Trump. I remember one candidate telling me how Ron DeSantis, he didn't have that same charm. But when they met Trump, Trump received them with open arms, and, you know, Trump had that charisma. which is fundamental in understanding Trump's appeal, actually, as well as the community aspect that I've talked about in past podcasts. But and I think another takeaway I had was just the stupidity of this cycle. My questions were quite simple, yet candidates like stupidly dodged them to great extents, which is something I can't fathom. And I think that just goes back to candidates being unprepared for what traditionally would have been incredibly easy questions. But because they are used to forums and because they're used to press, you don't question them to the degree they used to, and just because they don't get hard questionnaires anymore, they're unprepared for the simple questions. And I think that really showed when I was questioning. I think that's what it came down to. But I also think it just comes down to staffers being too controlling of their candidates for underestimating their candidates' ability. I mean, I have an amazing example here. Let's look at Nikki Haley. She is incredibly intelligent. She knows what's going on, right? When that slavery question came up, a very simple question. You just need to open up a history book. You know, what was the cause of the United States Civil War? Because her staffers have been giving her these talking points, and because she's so afraid of messing up, and I think those two combined to her just desperately trying to cling to her talking points. But that goes to a degree where I feel like it's almost like it's just hurts her, and it would have been better for her to just answer it freely without those nagging thoughts in her head, because she's incredibly smart. She obviously has the ability to answer these questions, and I feel like I've seen that up close. I've seen her in forums where there's not too many press there, where it's more of just a smaller audience. I think she excels in those areas, but the staff underestimated her, and I think they really restrained what she could have been in this primary. And I think if she had came out more forcefully against Trump, like she has in the last couple of months, I think she would have been at better standing. But the staff just underestimated a lot of candidates' abilities in this cycle and really hurt them. And I think that just goes to why, you know, some candidates stupidly dodged them to great extents, and just the whole stupidity of this. But it's still unfathomable to this day, and this never would have happened 20 or 30 years ago. And I think another takeaway I have is just the general lack of press access. I mean, I have people asking me, Quinn, you know, why are you doing this? Why isn't anyone else asking the questions? And let me tell you, boy, the press have the questions. I've seen them. I know them. They have the press. They have the questions that matter, but they just don't get to ask them. Candidates are able to restrain themselves from free questions. And you have to wonder, do the ones who release gushingly positive coverage of a candidate, are they real journalists at all? I mean, the people who do get access now just seems to be the people who suck up to a candidate to only release positive coverage. But I think those are my main takeaways from this cycle. I think I would like to leave you with this. I think there, if there's anything I've learned from this cycle, I would say that I feel like democracy is draining. I mean, I've seen it up close. There's not much open access anymore. So I think I'd like to implore people to just show up, make your voice heard to those in power, because I think our country fundamentally needs it in this really desperate time of need. I think we need citizens to show up, to show our voices, to show that our voice matters. And I think that is really what I have learned in this cycle, that we need to show up now more than ever. Because if we don't, I think we'll be in a world that's almost unrecognizable in 30, 40 years. And we need to change that. So I thank you for listening to this podcast. I have more coming out soon. I have some interviews scheduled. I am looking forward to those. I think we'll go more interviews next time. I think I'd like to talk about Biden's connection to Generation Z and more. in my upcoming episodes. So have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.